I am Planta Online. This is the commentary.ca. I've long been a fan of my guests now, and here's why. A few weeks ago, it was a Wednesday. After a late lunch, I was in the bathroom brushing my teeth. I had to be somewhere at 3 o'clock and had to be out of the house by 2:15. I've tried to stop running the water as I brush my teeth and to fill the silence or whatever it is that compels a lot of us to run the water. I turned on the radio in the bathroom. After the news, Eleanor Wachtel announced that she was to interview Simon Winchester on the history of the Oxford English Dictionary. It's not a dictionary I use. I use Wikipedia. Nor are dictionaries a topic I would have listened to, but something compelled me to listen, and soon enough I found myself riveted to the conversation, and I wasn't out of the house until about 10 minutes to 3. Later I sought the program on the CBC's website just to make sure I didn't miss anything. Eleanor Wachtel joins me now. She's quite simply the finest book interviewer in the country. To the author and the listener, she's easygoing and engaging, welcoming and approachable. She's written, co-edited a number of books, including indispensable books of some of her interviews. She began her career in Vancouver and was also an adjunct professor of women's studies at Simon Fraser University here. She moved to Toronto in 1987 as a literary commentator at the CBC. She has hosted Writers and Company since its inception in 1990. In 2005, she was named to the Order of Canada, and the citation made note of her prodigious gift at interviewing, among other notable achievements. In its 20th season, Writers and Company is the most prestigious literary program in the country. It airs on CBC Radio 1 here in Vancouver, Sundays at 5 p.m. and Wednesdays at 2. She's in town having just done the Alice Munro tribute at the Vancouver International Writers and Readers Festival. On November 21st, she returns to open the Jewish Book Festival with a conversation with Meyer Shalev. In Vancouver, please welcome to the Planta Online program, Eleanor Wachtel. Good morning, Ms. Wachtel.
Good morning. Thank you very much for that generous introduction.
It's really a pleasure to have you on the program. Do you miss Vancouver?
Very much, very much. I lived here for 12 years, and my best friends are still here. I think it was a time when you really make very good friends, and I miss everything that any sane person would miss, which, you know, the mountains and the water and the beaches. And I try to come out here as often as possible, either for work or for play and to see friends.
Do you ever think about how many interviews you've done?
No. I couldn't.
No?
No.
Now, the Writers and Company broadcast, is that what your work consists of day to day?
Yes.
Yeah, and you do other projects for, like, I know that I read a lot about you and that you're doing, you know, on-stage interviews and the sort. A lot of those are those that appear on the program as well?
Some of them do, some don't. On my way here, I was emceeing a fundraiser for Glenbow Museum in Calgary, so that wouldn't be for broadcast. That's just more of a being out there, outreach type of project. But I try, if possible, if I'm invited to an event like this or to, for instance, you mentioned doing the opening interview for the Jewish Book Festival with Meir Shalev, the Israeli writer, try to make it into a broadcast if I can. So for two reasons. One is so that my work is, you know, it leads into the program, so I'm working on a single focus, and also so that the events and different things that are happening in different parts of the country also, you know, get national broadcast.
Is there a preference when you interview someone? Like, do you like doing it over the phone? Do you like doing it in person, or do you like having an audience in front of you?
Probably my favorite is in person without an audience. Generally, with an audience is fine, but I think I like the intimacy of just the face-to-face, the one-on-one in a room together.
Do you edit the interviews?
I work with a producer in editing them, so I sort of mark up the notes of what should stay in, what should stay out, and then the producer edits them.
So when we listen to an interview, like you had Simon Winchester on a few weeks ago, or Nadeem Aslam a couple weeks ago as well, how long have you taped for?
That varies. Simon Winchester is a particularly articulate man, and probably, I did that interview a while ago, so I don't remember exactly, but I would think not that much longer than the actual broadcast time. So, but generally, I would talk to somebody if they have the time available for about an hour and a quarter, and then it would get trimmed down for the show is an hour long, but it also includes, you know, music and introductions and stuff like that.
How does what make writers and companies so good come together? Like, is there a formula that you could break down?
I don't think there's a formula. I think it It's a couple of things. I mean, there's the luxury of having that long format is part of it, and choosing writers, generally speaking, who have a body of work so that there are things to talk about generally beyond a single title. Usually there's opportunity to open it up into other subjects and have that time in which to do that. And also because it's a weekly show, and I did host a daily show at the same time, The Arts Tonight, for 12 years, and it's a different kind of rhythm, and you have to just get in and out much faster. So I'm even more aware of the benefits of having a weekly show in which I have time, and the producer has time, to read the work, read around the work, sometimes read another book, so that we really can, I don't know if I would presume to say depth, but we have the, you know, we can talk about a whole bunch of things because we have had the time to prepare.
And you're at a point now where you get to choose the guests you have on. I'm sure people want to come on. Did you turn down a lot of guests?
Well, I've always actually been lucky enough to be able to, for Writers and Company, to be able to choose the guests. I don't necessarily always get who I want, but I mean in the sense that I do get to decide who I want to try to get onto the program. I guess we turned it, but not in a formal way. It's just if people come approach us or publishers approach us and then just decide if that's somebody that I want to be talking to. Often I have wish lists that sort of hang around for a while, and then we try again, and then we get them. For instance, Philip Roth is someone I've wanted to talk to for a long time, and he was very unavailable, and I think he makes himself occasionally available. And then we got him. I mean, I had to go down and interview him in New York last month, and he's going to be on the program on November 1st.
A lot of what's written about you online has to do with the research. You liken it to cramming for an exam. Is it just you, or do you have a lot of people helping you along the way, like producers and the sort?
I work with, it's a small team. We have an associate producer who sort of physically amasses the research, and in a way that's getting easier because of the internet, less trudging off to the library. And then I work with a producer on every interview together, so we will both read the material and the producer prepares questions, and I work on those questions, and then we go back and forth a few times. So it's collaborative, and I really prefer that. I mean, occasionally I'll do something on my own, and it's okay, but I love the opportunity to exchange ideas and think through what the writers are doing with another person. But it's just one other person. It's not a whole... It's not any bigger than that.
And the reading, you obviously have to do a lot of reading for your job. Do you find that you have time to read for pleasure?
Not generally during what I'd call the school year.
Yeah.
But I find most of what I read, because I can choose who I'm interviewing, most of what I'm reading is a pleasure, but it is also for work. So I joke that I can only read dead authors in the summer. Because, you know... But then last summer I even found myself reading some new novels that were coming up to try to decide whether to do interviews. So I don't get tired of reading, but I do read a lot. I'm actually a relatively slow reader, so it's an occupational shortcoming. But often the first thing I'll do on vacation is read something, just read a quick novel to sort of feel like I'm on holiday.
Do you have more? You obviously have more than one book going at a time, do you?
I try not to do that.
Really?
I'm sort of a fairly linear person, and I prefer to just go from what, you know, as far, you know, beginning, end of each one. And also, I don't want to get mixed up about plots or people's biographies. So sometimes it's difficult if I'm doing a special series and I have to prepare a whole bunch of interviews at once, or during something like this time of year when there's an author's festival and I'll be doing four interviews in a row. It's a struggle to just sort of keep it all focused and separate, but I prefer to do one book at a time.
Now, do you read anywhere, or is there a specific place you have to read?
Oh no, if you have to read as much as I do, you have to be able to read anywhere.
Do you use a Kindle or any of these electronic things?
No, I'm curious about it because when I do go on vacation in the summer, it's usually, you know, one suitcase for books and one for clothes. So a Kindle, you know, would be a potential great advantage, but I haven't tried it out yet. I actually, just on the show this week, was talking to Robert Darnton, who's talks not so much, he's an historian, but he's also an historian of the book, so he's been looking at the versions of the book, past, present, and future, going from scrolls to Gutenberg and movable type to what he calls codex, which is basically books, and then, of course, online. I think I'll try it sometime. The screens keep getting better, and maybe I'll just wait till they get better.
Who are some of your role models or inspirations as an interviewer or broadcaster?
I don't think I sort of fell into this sort of backwards, in that I started off as a writer-broadcaster, which was the person who came out and did reports and did reviews. And in fact, I started out doing theater reviews in Vancouver before moving to Toronto to take up full-time work at CBC. So I wasn't the interviewer. I was usually the interviewee presenting the material or writing pieces or bringing in clips of interviews. So it wasn't that I had a goal and I listened to someone and thought, that's who I want to be. So I can't say that I have models or inspirations in that department. I mean, there are writers who I admire, and there are I will occasionally listen online to some other interviewers in the U.S. or the U.K., but don't really have a model.
Do you have favorites, though, that you listen to?
Yes, but it's actually not so much an interview format. I like Ira Glass on This American Life, but that's just, it's a different style of program and amusement. That would be one that I would podcast, say. And I'll occasionally listen to Melvin Bragg in London, but his show tends to get too academic-y for... I start off being interested, and then I fade.
So, yeah.
And if I need, you know, I'll for research purposes, I'll listen to Terry Gross or someone like that in the U.S. It's more if I have to listen to somebody and try to decide if it's someone I want to interview, so I might hear what they sound like or something like that. But it's not really choosing to spend an hour spending my time that way.
Did you find that there's a great appetite for what you do, the sort of long form, in-depth conversations on the radio? I mean, I'm the choir, so I mean, I'm a fan already. But when you go across the country, do you get a sense that there's a great appetite for this?
Well, when I go across the country, the audience I encounter are the people who love it. So I guess I'm exposed to the choir in that sense, because the people who come when I do these on-stage events are usually people who are fans of the show and who want to hear the writer and maybe want to watch how it all happens. And the funny thing is that often at the end of an on-stage interview, which will go on for a full hour, hour and a half even, people will come and ask, when will it be broadcast, so they can hear it again, you know.
Yeah.
Or hear themselves in the room or something like that. So I think there's an appetite for long format. I mean, obviously it's rare. It's rare not only in Canada, but even in the U.S. or the U.K. It's not often that you can get this style of program, especially on the public broadcaster. I mean, there are, I think it's Michael Silverblatt or someone in California does long format on public radio. But it's to get, I mean, even on BBC in London, it's rare that you get a whole hour with a single writer.
Are you recognized on the street, say?
Not unless I open my mouth.
Yeah.
Which is fine with me.
Would you... I mean, having the program on once a week, I mean, would you want to have it on more than once a week?
Well, it's actually, I mean, it's broadcast twice a week, as you pointed out.
Yeah.
It has two airings. And then I've also, for the last 2 years, since I used to do the Arts Tonight, which was a daily show, when that program ended 2 years ago, since then I've been doing an hour a month on Ideas called Walk Tell on the Arts, which is just an opportunity to do something besides books, interviewing architects and filmmakers and composers and things like that. So I like having that other side. But I don't think I would want to have to create two original programs per week, because then it would be too pressed, and then I wouldn't be able to... I could do it, but I wouldn't be able to read as much for each interview if that happened. Because even when I was hosting The Arts Tonight, I wouldn't interview... I rarely interview fiction writers. I would interview people who wrote nonfiction or people whose work I could get a quick take on, but I don't enjoy interviewing someone whose work I haven't read. I mean, it's certainly possible, and we all know that it's done all the time, but it's not what I really like to do.
I dug up an article, I think it was in the Hamilton Spectator from 5 years ago, and it made mention that about how you ask authors about their mother's influence and their impact on their lives and their writing.
And their fathers, too.
Yeah. Well, what impact did your parents have on you?
Ah, good question. One of the reasons I ask it is that it's something that it's not that I'm a strict Freudian or anything, but I do think it's something that can shape people's lives. And also, it's something that the listener can relate to, because if you get into too esoteric details about the work at hand, the listener hasn't necessarily read it. And whereas if they hear somebody talk about their life experience, that's a good story that anyone can connect to. In terms of influence of my parents, they both had very little formal education, and we didn't have books in the house except books that we got from the library. But I had two older siblings who I think probably had a stronger role modeling effect on me, because they read a lot and were very good students at school, and I thought that's what you had to do. I guess my parents were encouraging in a general way that education was good for you, and they were very hardworking, so I didn't think that working hard was a bad thing. I think that would be my... It's a question I haven't... It's interesting that you ask, and I'll have to think about it some more, because it's not one that I've thought about.
Are you thinking of writing another book?
I'm not sure. I've collected two books of sort of omnibus interviews. The first two books, Writers and Company and More Writers and Company, were just kind of the best of from that period. And then I put together a book called Original Minds, which was built around a theme around the turn of the millennium, when I interviewed not just fiction writers, but people who wrote books but were in all different kinds of fields, like Jane Goodall and Amartya Sen, the economist, and Gloria Steinem, and so on. And then I put together what I think of as a more intimate book about Carol Shields, who was a friend, and I had just a lot of material about her and wanted to express my own feelings about her and her work in a small book called Random Illuminations. So I'm not sure what I would do next. Feeling it would have to be something that I would feel a strong connection to.
Now, have you got favorite interviews? Like, are there guests that you would have on again if you had the chance, or have them on every day if you could?
There are a few people who are just wonderful to talk to, and you hardly would need to edit anything they said. And one would be Oliver Sacks. Margaret Drabble, just off the top, in terms of people who I've interviewed, where you don't have to even touch a word. There are others which don't come to mind this second, but there are people who would fit that cap. Yes.
Are there guests that intimidate you? I mean, one of the things that I love about the show is that you sound so engaging and you sound calm that nothing seems to faze you. Are there people that intimidate you still?
Not still. I think earlier on, I remember the first time I interviewed Nadine Gordimer. She hadn't yet won the Nobel Prize, but you know, the South African writer. But she was really very big in my consciousness, and I had read in one of the research files or something, it said something like she not only doesn't suffer fools gladly, but she has a rapier tongue or something. I mean, something that just sounded scary.
Yeah.
So the first time I interviewed her, and I wasn't even face-to-face, she was in South Africa, and I was in Toronto, but I could feel little flutters in my stomach as the interview began. And then just into the first answer, I could hear, even though I was asking her a question, I'm sure she'd been asked before, it was just a sort of warm-up thing, and I could hear by the generosity of her answer that she was going to be okay, and it was going to be okay.
No,
I guess I was a little nervous when I went to see Philip Roth, because I had been reading him for, you know, whatever, 30, 40 years or something, and because he... But I wasn't nervous in the interview. I mean, I was going to say, a little bit apprehensive, but not nervous. No, I guess I'm lucky that way. I don't get really nervous.
No, you're in your 20th season on Writers and Company. The 20th anniversary is coming up. Are there big plans to market?
Not yet.
No. With the future of the show, do you intend to continue with it much longer?
As long as I can.
Yeah. Eleanor, I very much appreciate you coming on today. This has just been such a great pleasure, and you're good to do this. We'll continue listening to the program.
Thank thank you very much, and thank you for your questions. Good questions.
Thanks very much. The show is Writers and Company. It's on CBC Radio 1, Sundays at 5 p.m., Wednesdays at 2. Eleanor Wachtel, its host, on the line. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plano.